Welcome to the final session of day one of Champions of Change Strengthening Disability Advocacy Conference. I'm Robin Gale, and I will introduce to you Marianne Diamond, who will be chairing our next session called A Plan for Change, about the 2013-2016 Victorian State Disability Plan. Let me just tell you a little bit about Marianne before I hand over to her, and so she can ably chair this next session. Marianne Diamond is the General Manager, Advocacy and Engagement at Vision Australia. Marianne leads Vision Australia's advocacy and engagement work, and whenever I read about Marianne, I get exhausted, because listen to this. She leads Vision Australia's advocacy and engagement work. She's responsible for government relations, policy and advocacy, client consultation and engagement, communications and marketing. Bit of an underachiever. She is the immediate past president of the World Blind Union, and prior to her current role at Vision Australia, Marianne was the inaugural CEO of the Australian Federation of Disability Organisations. She was recently elected as the next chair of the International Disability Alliance and was awarded the Order of Australia in the 2014 Queen's Birthday Honours. Marianne is blind. Excuse me. Marianne is blind. She has four children, one of whom has a vision impairment. She has a husband. And she has a... And I'm exhausted hearing about her life. Marianne, I'll hand over to you for the next session, A Plan for Change. Thank you.
Thanks, Robin, and thank you for that introduction. But like many people, in this room, we all do lots of different things and often at the one time. So welcome to the session, A Plan for Change. This is an interactive session which will explore how advocates can use the Victorian State Disability Plan to create change and influence the future. We just heard from the Parliamentary Secretary a little about this plan. And Michael, I think it's up to all of us to get feedback, not just you. Welcome to our speakers, Liz Kelly, Michael Cromie, Laura Lowe, Bianco Smith and Karen Howe. Welcome to all of you. I'm surprised. I thought you all would have opted for bingo. We have designed this session to provide as much time as possible to you in the room to interact with our panellists. We will take questions along the way, but I'll tell you how we'll do it as we go. We're almost 2 years into the State Disability Plan. It's timely for us to have this discussion about the plan, whether it's making the change happen, and how we can use the plan to bring about the kind of change that we know we need and want. Our panellists will speak on the plan from different perspectives, and then we'll take questions from the floor. I'll let you know when. Sorry, I'm reading my notes because I wasn't as prepared as I should have been. I think we're all aware that Victoria has led the way in innovative and individualised and high-quality supports for persons with disabilities, and much of this leadership has been influencing the design of and development of the NDIS. But we must not forget that large numbers of Victorians living with a disability will not qualify for packages under the NDIS. And for a whole lot of reasons, and it is important that Victoria finds a way to provide the appropriate support to those of us who in that group, while keeping the commitment to make the resources change over to the NDIS, as promised in the agreements. I think I can say that all of us agree that all infrastructure and community participation programs and services must be inclusive at the time of development, and the best way to do this is by using the principles of universal design at the stage of design of a program. We've heard a lot about employment today, and in employment and community participation of persons with disabilities, both in government and in the community, will be enhanced if there is a commitment to and the practice of social and accessible procurement programs, both within government and those organisations government provide resources to. But I would say before I hand to my speakers, it is pleasing to see examples of the plan in action, such as the recent reform to the taxi industry following the inquiry and the $5 million commitment by government to upgrading the Geelong railway station in line with accessible standards. But that's enough from me. I'd like to move to our first speaker, Liz Kelly. Liz, you've read her bio in the program, so I won't spend too much time, but Liz is a parent of a person with a disability. She's a deputy chair of the Victorian Disability Advisory Council, a member of the Victorian Disability Services Board, and has her own business. So, Liz, how can the plan make a difference, and how can advocates use that plan to know and understand what difference it makes?
Thanks, Marianne. I guess the State Disability Plan was put together with, as Andrea pointed out, with people with disabilities input. From a Victorian Disability Advisory Council perspective, I guess one of our roles, or a huge part of our role, is to ensure that what's in the plan, that we continue to work with our various networks. Anyone that doesn't know about the Victorian Disability Advisory Council, it is constituted under the Disability Act. We're there to provide advice to the minister and to influence various parts of government around disability issues. So there is a place there for us to influence across government the implementation of the plan. I guess I'm a big one personally. I'm a big one for action. So I like to see outcomes. I think at times when there's a plan, it's very difficult. As things over time happen, you don't realise that they happen because you're on to the next thing. And one of the key things that VDAC are involved in is ensuring that we evaluate the plan, that we go back to the various groups that we spoke to that and other people that when we put the plan or when the government put the plan together to see whether things have actually changed, to try and measure some change. I would suggest that we still have a long way to go and still will. And I think, to reiterate, under a national disability insurance scheme, I think there's been a lot of focus on that. And we've put a lot of energy, a lot of people have put a lot of energy into ensuring that it gets up, that it's successful. We're all monitoring it, looking at it. But what we don't often think about is it doesn't matter if you've got a great package, if you can't get into your local school, get on a train, get access to work, get into a workplace, it doesn't matter. It's not going to be very helpful. So to me, the state plan and ongoing state plans is about influencing social inclusion, influencing other parts of life that we should, as people with a disability, as parents, as whoever should just, well, other people take for granted, but we should have appropriate access to things. And I think this is a way to continue to influence it. From my own personal perspective, the reason I'm sitting here today, and I've probably told this story, so you'll probably get really bored with it, but anyone that hasn't heard this story, the reason I'm here today, sitting here, is because my son was included in a childcare. Connor's got very high needs. He's in a wheelchair. He's enterally fed. The childcare just took him in. Now, there was no barriers. We were approached by the principal when he was three of the school my daughter goes to, our local school, saying, oh, what will Connor need to come to school? Because we're just doing some infrastructure changes. So they're the sort of things, and I know you're all advocates, so I'm sort of speaking to the converted here. But I guess they're the sort of stories that we need to tell people too. Sometimes we need to tell some good stories. What's worked? What has worked for us? And, you know, obviously we've still got to fight the hard fight too. So that's probably from my perspective and from VDAC's perspective, it's about hearing the various successes, things that we still need to work on. So,
thanks, Liz. I guess halfway through the plan is where we are now. It'd be good to also hear from some of you about, do you think you've seen a difference since the plan was rolled out? If you have, let us know what. If you haven't, what would you like to see? And some ideas about how you would like to get that information before we move to our next speakers. We're going to take some comments, and you might have questions for Liz too. So Felix is going to assist the microphone rovers with identifying who the next question will come from. So Felix, if you could stand up and maybe speak so everyone knows where you are in the room.
I'm at the back.
Okay, so Felix is at the back. So those with the microphones, if you look at Felix, he will identify to you who is the next person with their hand up. So we avoid someone having their hand up for an hour. So we're going to take three comments, and then if there's questions to be answered, answer them. Otherwise, we'll keep going for about 10 minutes.
No hands.
Anyone got their hand up?
Oh.
Okay.
I'd like to just buy into, Liz, your comment, because we've been trying to get this now for a long time. The publicising of good stories. As a parent advocate, we're only called in when things go haywire. So you get a picture of the scene out there that it's disastrous and awful and the whole bit. However, we also know there's some really, really good practices happening in schools, but nobody knows about them. And that's almost a crime. And we've tried to engage the ministry or the DECD to put together a resource that actually tells us about these good practices, because that's how teachers learn from each other. It's from these. If you've got any suggestions of how maybe the advisory council can put something together, because years ago that was a very powerful tool that's now just disappeared off the scene, and there's nothing to replace it that we can take to schools or we can show teachers, principals, parents, whoever, of how to go about it that would actually, I think, further some of the objectives within the plan.
Thanks. We'll keep just moving. When you get the microphone, if you could say your name and if you're from an organisation, which organisation, that would be helpful.
Yeah, we've got a couple just to say.
We'll do them and then Liz can respond.
If it took Medicare, let's say, 4 years to come in, why is it taking the NDIS so long?
Okay, we'll keep going to the next one and then I'll invite someone to respond. Next comment, question.
Is that on? Hello, David Foran is my name. Thank you, Marianne, and thank you, Liz, for that. You briefly alluded to a point I wanted to at least raise is the prospect for Victorians, and I think we do things reasonably, well, relatively good here, relatively better than other places, so we should be congratulated for that at least. But Services Connect is coming in, the aged care reforms are coming in, NDIS is coming in. There's a massive amount of flux, and someone once said at a conference elsewhere was, if you don't like change, you're going to like obsolescence even less. What can be the recommendations or the use of the plan to prepare Victorians at least for what is a massive transformation in the space that will or won't lead to the ultimate care of people with disability in our society?
Thanks, David. So, Liz, do you want to have a crack at these? We can all help out.
Yeah,
don't worry.
I guess to go to the good story, the first one. I think on, is it halfway through the plan, Michael? There are some videos, and there is one where I'm speaking about inclusion in schools. So there is a video up that yep. sort of is saying this is where we're at the moment. So there is something there. I know that the school at my son's including, because he also goes to a special school as well, so he goes to a special school and a mainstream school. They were really conscious of not being seen as the school that... Because what happened in our local area is they were known as a school for that was, you know, inclusive. And so every person in the area, even if they weren't zoned, was flocking to that school. Mm-hmm. They were saying we actually want other schools to take on. It shouldn't be something that we're, you know, it's just our school. So I agree that we need to sort of be able to tell good stories, and it's something that all schools can do and should do. Basically, so.
Can I just add to that? I think it's very unusual to start with a question that's so positive and talking about good news stories, and I don't think we do promote the good stories well. I think we have pockets of examples of that. I'm really interested in maybe catching up with you afterwards to hear the sort of response you got from Department of Education and Early Childhood Development, given I would have thought this is a real opportunity to present positive work that's happening in there from a department such as education that often cops a lot of grief. So, really keen to do that. We've got an interdepartmental committee of which education is on, and we'd be more than happy to talk to them about your question. And the other questions are a lot more difficult, I think. So.
Yeah, maybe I'll have a go at the Medibank came in 4 years and why is NDIS taking so long? I'm not sure they're comparable programs. As we know, Medicare collected a lot of money from taxpayers, and taxpayers are contributing to the NDIS, but it isn't sufficient enough money to cover all of the cost of the rollout of the NDIS. And there is also a huge development and training of skilled staff that needs to take place for a full rollout of NDIS. So, and a number of programs are differently managed and organised in each state. And so I think that it is learn from experience so we can improve as we roll out to more areas, but also recognising that we don't have the workforce, the skilled workforce in place at the moment if we were to just introduce it. So there's a whole lot of reasons. And I think David's comment on the huge amount of things happening at the moment, I think I'd just re-emphasise the point that's made by a few, the Parliamentary Secretary as well. We need to work together. We can't think of not having some interaction, connection with awareness of what is happening in other sectors, such as aged care sector and so on. But Karen, Laura, do you want to comment before we move to just a couple more questions?
I agree entirely with the importance of working together, and I think us working with organisations like VCOS and other PEAKs is critical in keeping the voice of advocacy up there with regard to the reform that's happening in Victoria and federally. And I think often disability service providers, their voices are there, they're very well resourced to be involved in different forums and conferences. So it's just really important that we link up with those other peak bodies that can make sure that advocacy for people with disabilities is considered as part of the reforms.
Thanks, Karen. What we might do is move to our next two speakers, who both are really heading government-type bodies, and then take some more questions from the floor then. So our next speaker is Michael Cromie, and Michael is the Acting Manager for the Office for Disability in Victoria and has a lot of experience over many years in policy within government. So, Michael, the Office of Disability is responsible for putting the plan into action and checking whether it is making a difference. As a manager, how do you think advocates can influence the plan and find out if it is making the difference that we're looking for?
So I should start by saying, I think it was Mel that asked the question about it is Mel, isn't it? Yeah, about where the how, if you can do this for 4 years. So the plan took a long time to come about in the way it is. So it wasn't something that happened overnight. And it was largely the work of advocates, self-advocates and so forth that made the State Disability Plan happen. And the Disability Act that was the precursor to the plan came largely from the work of strong advocates and a self-advocacy sector that played a huge part in making making the Act happen and making the Act be something that means there will always be a State Disability Plan there because it comes out of legislation. So it will always be there. So that was a lot of work that happened at your end that made it happen. So it goes from 2013 to 2016 and all government departments have put forward actions to the plan. So there's around about, you've got plans, I think, dotted around the room, but underneath the plan that you've got on the table is an implementation plan and that has 146 actions that have been contributed by government departments. Includes areas like health, housing, transport and education. So NDIS is not the panacea. It won't fix everything. And I know you all know that. But the plan kind of recognises that the NDIS, without a lot of action in areas like transport, education, health, housing and all the other justice and other areas, will not mean that people can experience life in the way they want to. So it tries to pick up on the interconnection of all those things and the requirement for those things to work in tandem. Rights is a big part of Goal 2 of the plan and, again, advocates and self-advocates play a huge part in making sure that people get their rights and can exercise their rights, either their own or those of others. How can you help us with it? Hopefully that's something you are interested in. We need to get it out to more people. We need more people to be aware of it. The plan is just a plan and needs momentum, needs impetus and needs people to get on board and understand that while it might not go as far as what you would like it to, it's a start of a catalyst for change. So making sure people, if they're not aware of it, become aware of it, that where you can assist people to tell us whether the plan is or isn't working, because, you know, certainly we've heard a lot of stories about both where it's making a difference, but certainly many, many stories where we think it doesn't go far enough and we would really like to use the opportunity from Office for Disability perspective to push the agenda and work with other government departments to push the way they are doing their work. And certainly, Mary-Anne, in your comments about universal design principles are where we're coming from as well, and we would really like to see that adopted across the board. But we've got a way to go with that at the moment. One thing that's happened, certainly with the plan, is that areas like the Self-Advocacy Resource Unit and others have actually used the plan in supporting the work they do. So if a government department, including ours, is saying they're going to do something under the plan, you can certainly hold them to account for that. This is signed off by all ministers and all government department secretaries. So if you feel like the things that they've said they're going to do under the plan are being done, you can use that as a way in which you lobby and go back to government, and certainly that's a big role for advocacy and self-advocacy, I think. In that way, we'll be held to account, and in that way, we'll be able to continue to progress on the areas that we're supposed to be progressing on. So I am firmly of the view that the plan isn't the be-all and end-all. The plan needs a hell of a lot of work. The plan needs to continue to be something that evolves, changes, and I think the Parliamentary Secretary mentioned that in also saying that you can put me under the pump. She mentioned that this is something that we see as something that needs to continue to evolve over time. So we're at a really, really important point in Victoria, as the rest of Australia is, and you know, as I said at the start, the NDIS is only one part of this equation. We need this plan to work. You know, there's no point having support finally and have waited for it for a long time, if you can't use that support accessing public transport or anything else, and you can't get out and do things in the community with the support that you would like to do. So that's our view, and we would like you to assist us in the goal of making this plan a reality in those areas.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for your presentation. I'm going to move straight on to Laura Lowe Bianco-Smith. And Laura is the manager of the Transport Accessibility Unit in the Department of Transport. And so, Laura, I guess you're, you know, got an important job and you've had lots of experience in policy and management. So I guess, as the manager, how do you think advocates can influence the plan?
Thank you. Like I've heard today, I think from a few people, there are many ways that advocates can influence the plan. Using public transport as an example, I'll tell you how advocates have influenced our plan today and how you can continue to influence. And I encourage you to keep doing it, definitely. So as you've heard from Michael and the others, the State Disability Plan prioritises public transport as one of its aims. It wants to improve public transport so that people can get on with their lives, they get to their medical appointments, work, education, social activities, whatever. So it's an important priority. To support that, there's another plan that sits under it. It's called the Accessible Public Transport Plan in Victoria. And just as a bit of background, Public Transport Victoria, who I work for, will be delivering on that plan. So I'm assuming you've all heard of PTV, but if you haven't, it was set up 2 years ago. And it was set up basically to fix public transport, to make it easy to use, and basically make it less confusing for customers. So they have one place to go to get information. So we had a lot of input into the development of the plan, and we relied heavily on what the advocates, self-advocates and community advocates told us. So they told us that our previous plan, which was all about infrastructure and just improving buildings and railways and that thing, wasn't enough. They told us that we need to think about the whole of the journey. So we listened to that. They told us that we need to improve customer service. They told us that we need to talk to people more. Oh, there's a good idea. They also told us that we need to fix services and that we need to fix facilities. Basically, we need the trams, buses, trains to be easier to use, and we still need to upgrade stops and stations and that sort of thing. So those priorities that people told us about are now the priorities of the action plan. So that was really important that we listened to what people told us, and it really helped us structure the document. So that's one way that advocates influenced the plan in the first place. So it's really important now that we're in delivering the plan that we continue to listen to what advocates tell us. It's critical that we talk to you throughout the delivery of the plan and get ideas on what's working well and what isn't. So the plan requires us to talk to you as part of delivering it. There's a whole priority area around listening to advocates. So we have to do it. We don't just do it because we want to do it. Just to give you some examples of how we're listening to advocates, we've set up a public transport access committee. They're a committee that provides advice to the government, to the minister, and they come to us with ideas and thoughts around how we can do things better, and they tell us some of the problems they're experiencing. We also ask them to consider things that we're developing. So if we're, for example, when we develop the action plan, we ask them to give us ideas on what we can include in it. They read it, they reviewed it. So that was an important role for the Access Committee. Another way advocates can get involved is participating in consultation and trials that we run. So as an example, I don't know if you've all seen the new E-class trams that are out there. So they're nice new shiny trams. 2 years ago when we designed the tram, we invited people from the public, advocates, community groups to come along and test it. So there are a lot of people with different disabilities that tested the tram, and as a result of what they told us, we changed the design. So there's more handles, the colour contrast is different. People with a vision impairment told us what colours work better for them. People in mobility devices told us that we need to change the manoeuvring space. So that was a real direct change in the design from those consultation and trials. We've talked to people about toilets, information and that sort of thing. We continually seek input. Another way advocates can have input is just telling us what's going wrong out there. So there's only four of us in my team, and we just can't be everywhere all the time. We don't always know what's going well and what's not. An example, I think Ty's here from Blind Citizens. They came to us and told us that Southern Cross just isn't working for people with a vision impairment. They wrote us a document explaining all of the issues and concerns, and as a result of that, we got an audit done to investigate the problem, and now I know it's taken a long time, Ty, but we are going out to fix the problem. So I guess in summary, there's a few ways you can help influence the plan. You can tell us what's not working and what is working, and I encourage you to keep doing that because we just can't be everywhere and understand everything. You can participate in formal consultation, in trials and tests that I think a lot of government services are doing, not just us. And of course, the most important thing, and I think Michael talked about it before, is when we say we're going to do something in the plan, make sure we do. And if you're reading and it says December 14, you're going to have the website accessible, and in January it's not, tell someone, ring us up, hold us to account. So,
thanks, Laura. That's a really good way to end your presentation. So now we've heard from both Michael and Laura, you know, one from the Office for Disability, who has the responsibility of checking the plans being rolled out and telling us what's happening. We've heard from Transport, which is one of the key pillars in the plan, of what they're doing to roll it out and ensure that you all keep informed. So we might move to you in the room again. And Felix, if we could get some hands up and our roving mics to people who would like to ask a question or make a comment. We've heard from three of our four speakers. So for the next 10 minutes, maybe if we take three questions, comments.
Hi, Kay Timmons from Disability Advocacy in Grampians. I was just wondering whether the transport is only for metro or is it actually for rural as well?
No, my team cover both metro and rural, so we've got programs and projects in both areas.
Thank you.
Andrew's Castanese Advocate for Leadership Plus. The issue I'm experiencing is the fact that a lot of people are having problems with the ISPs, and so therefore accessing general community and what have you seems to be not going to be a case of happening until those issues are in place. So the action plan is one thing, but then having ISPs and actually effectively working is another, and wondering what's being done to address that situation.
Yeah, it's a question that I'm not unfamiliar with and don't have a really good answer for, I don't think. And that is, you know, certainly that there's still more demand than there is resources at the moment. There's no question about that. So people's access to ISPs, there's still a lot of people on the Disability Support Register in Victoria as well. Absolutely, you know, the whole reason why the NDIS has happened is because of that inability to meet the demand that's out there. That doesn't sort of answer your question in terms of what happens right now for individuals, I think. While certainly, you know, you'd like to think that people's ISPs, where they do have them, are working well for them, and we take a person-centred approach. I think that that still hasn't quite got to the point where everyone can expect a really good, consistent way of going about making sure people, what they want, is being provided to them through ISPs as well. So you've kind of got a lack of resources in one part or unmet need in one part, and you've got a part that there's still a lot of work to be done on the approaches of organisations about the way they go. Organisations and you know, the structures that sit around the ISP approach. So there's no... I can't give you another answer about additional resources or anything like that because, you know, it is a difficult... You know, certainly a difficult time. The answer is that the whole reason why the broken, fragmented system that was described in the Productivity Commission report needed to be addressed was because of the things you're describing right now. And let's hope by 2019-20, when full scheme comes, that some of those issues are addressed to a certain degree anyway. But the continued, talking about the role of advocacy, the continued role of advocacy in that area is critical, obviously.
We've got three questions down here.
Okay,
well.
Yeah, we'll take them.
This is for Lauren.
Yes?
I'd like to say well done for improvements for the trams, buses and trams. What's happening with the taxis?
I don't have too much detail what's happening in taxis. I can speak to you afterwards if you want me to ask somebody in the taxi commission.
I've got some. I've got some of that just because we were involved. The taxi inquiry took place, and that was about the taxi industry was going through great difficulty, and as part of that, there was certainly a move towards incentivising some of the ways, so providing greater numbers of wheelchair accessible taxis was within the recommendations, that we need to provide more incentives for taxi operators to provide more of those, and that included regional areas, having better incentives for regional areas and taxis in those areas. So the idea being that those changes to the cost of licences would mean an increase in the number of taxis hopefully that'll flow on and that'll happen. The other thing is the development of a centralised booking system, which means that hopefully people with a disability get priority in dispatching of taxis, so that if a wheelchair accessible taxi's there and picks up someone that doesn't require a wheelchair accessible taxi, then that leaves someone else waiting for an extraordinary period of time, is the feedback we've heard. So hopefully that centralised booking system works and gets off the ground at some point soon. But those recommendations have been taken on by PTV, yeah. The TSC, sorry, Taxi Services Commission, yeah.
Thank you. Next question or comment?
Thank you. My name's Andy Calder. I'm a disability advocate with the Uniting Church at a state level. I'm interested in this particular topic. It's a taboo topic, really, in forums such as and conferences like this, and it's the word that begins with S, spirituality. And I think it's an area that often is very, very important to people in their lives, and it's a box that doesn't get ticked when it comes to the service delivery for people with disabilities across Victoria. And yet some research in 2010 that we did with the Office for Disability highlighted the importance of this area for many people as a motivator for social inclusion.
Yep.
I'd be interested in the panel's comments and feedback to that, and particularly welcome further dialogue. Thank you.
I wasn't around back then. It's Andrew, is it? Yeah, I wasn't around back then, but I'm sure it's true, and I think that is an area that you would notice isn't covered within the plan as it stands at the moment. We'd be really interested in having further dialogue with you about how that might look. That would be good.
Yeah. Maybe you could have some conversation, but I was also just going to add before Liz makes a comment that as part of NDIS packages, when they roll out in different areas, people set their own goals and aspirations, and I think things like that are important people will be part of their own goal setting. So you might find that some of that is addressed there. But Liz, you would...
I was just going to highlight, I thought, I was thinking within the plan that it probably sits within access to your local community. Mm-hmm. Part of your local community or your community life and what's important to you is your spirituality, then that sits within inclusion in that space within your community, because it's not just about work, education, access to public transport. It's actually being able to access whatever, you know, buildings or life that you want to have access to, that broader community is inclusive as well for people. So for me, it sits within that space. And I guess from an advocacy point of view, if people are bringing certain things to certain spaces or ministers or their local members or whoever it might be, that they, you know, take a copy of the plan with them and go, you know, point to a point in the plan that says, look, you know, this is what your department or community have committed to. So it's something you can take in your hand to say, it sort of adds, I guess it's a framework that adds to your arsenal of tools of what you can use in your advocacy world.
Thanks, Liz. That's really good advice.
Yeah. We've got three more questions still.
Okay, we'll take the three that are pending, and then we're going to move to our final speaker.
I'm Jared, and I'm here on behalf of Widest today.
Could you just get closer to the microphone?
Sorry, I'm Jan. I'm here on behalf of YDES today. The plan is from 2013 to 2016, and I hope that in November there will be a change of government, but how would that impact on the plan if that happens? And also, I've been noticing there's quite a lot of good public transport construction going on in my area, and places like Balaclava and Springvale and around the southeast. Wondering how would that, it would have been really good to see more of that in the plan as well, with the roll on, roll off stops that Metro have taken on board themselves. But it would actually be good to see that in the plan.
Okay, so first of all, we're not sure if there will be a change of government until after the election, but it is a good question. So I guess, and you raise the issue of transport as well. So briefly, Michael, is the plan, does the plan have bipartisan support? Does it happen, continue to end 2016, irrespective of who's in government? And then maybe, Laura, you might comment on the more of the same or more of the rollout on the transport.
Not necessarily. So the Act requires a plan, so there'll be a plan in place in terms of what the current government, should there be a change of government, has committed to. Obviously, the meter kind of starts again on that. My own view, and this is not a DHS view, it's my own, is that I think it would be very surprising should a change of government occur and the commitments that were made by government departments in the past not be honoured. I think that would be a really difficult political position to be put yourself into as a party. I think you'd be potentially... I don't think it would be a good move. So all I can take from that is that I think there'd be unlikely to be a wind back of the sort of things that have been committed to date, and we'd like to see more good things committed to, if anything.
Okay, thanks. Laura, do you want to say anything? Because we do have two questions and we've still got one speaker. Anything briefly you can add?
Just in relation to the transport actions, regardless of who comes into government, PTV has separately made its own commitment to improving accessibility. So all the actions we've identified will still roll out. The difference is how much money we've got to do it. So it'll be around how quickly some of those actions happen. But we are doing a lot of work to ensure independent access for people, so immobility devices, so putting out some raised platforms, that sort of thing, so people can independently board trains rather than relying on drivers. So you'll see some of that coming your way soon. Look out for an announcement.
Okay, thank you. We'll move to the second last question.
Hi, my name is Michelle Critchley from Disability Advocacy and Information Service in Wodonga. Just a question about the Mikey card, which I assume is part of or what you do. Just asking if you've had much feedback on that, because as a country person coming from the country, I know I find it incredibly frustrating to come in and get ask people questions, get different answers of when I swipe on and off, where I can go to. So I think I found out I can only go as far as Seymour on the Mikey card, and then after that it has to be on a different ticket. So I'm someone who, I don't have an intellectual disability, I don't have an acquired brain injury, I don't have disabilities in coming in from the country to go to medical appointments. If I'm finding it incredibly frustrating and difficult to manoeuvre around, I'm wondering if you've got much feedback on how others are finding that. Just to the point of even topping it up, I have to register online if I register online, it's in my name, so it means only I can use the card. Yeah. Just things like that I just find really frustrating, where I just want to go and pay some money and use the service.
Yeah, look, I don't think you're the only one who has those problems.
No, not at all.
Fortunately, I'm not in the area that gets the complaints about Mikey, but I understand there are some issues that, you know, people are concerned about. If you have a disability that means you can't use the ticketing system, we do have free tickets available. So there's an access fare pass, there's a scooter and wheelchair pass, there's a vision impairment pass, companion pass. So there are different options for people that can't use it. But if it's just about the confusion, then I would say you're not the only one. And we do have a call centre that can respond to some of those. It will get better as it's fully rolled out across the region, but at the moment, yeah.
Press 2 if you want to speak to somebody about confusion with Mikey Card. Press 3 if you want to speak to someone else.
Get the point.
We've recently got a new
customer. It's really frustrating for people who...
Can I suggest just, we haven't got a lot of time, but I think it's a very valid point and one that many of us have experienced or know people that experience. Maybe, Laura, if you're not the person in this department, but you could take on board the comment and maybe some information be made available on a website or through, you know, the Office for Disability or something that people could share about its use for persons with disabilities coming from outside the Melbourne area.
Yep,
and
sure.
We might move to the last question.
Yep. My name is Christian Astorian from the Diversity and Disability Program. I would like to make a quick comment, really, about the state disability plan, because I think it is a very good document to the point where the benefit of this plan is not only for people with a disability. It's really a plan that will provide benefit to the overall community. And when we talk about accessibility, this is something that everyone benefits. From the point of view, probably I wouldn't even call it anymore a disability plan. I will call it more of a universal plan for the whole community.
Yes.
Now, having said that, I would like also to add the fact that, unfortunately, with this plan, there is no real accountability to stick to what the plan is saying within the time frame. And there is no penalty for not following the plan. The last important thing that I would like to add, you know, I would like to see more the private sector to be involved with this plan. And this is a question I would like to ask the panel, how do you think we can make the private sector be more involved? Thank you.
Thank you, Christian, for that insightful comment and question. But I'm going to ask the panel to hold the question because we are really short of time. But it's a really nice lead into our final speaker, your reminder to all of us that this is not just a plan for persons with disability, it's a community plan, really, for everyone, and how should we involve private sector. But I'd like to move to our final speaker, who is Karen Howe, And Karen is someone I've known for many years and been very interested to watch all of the great work she does. She's currently the Executive Director of Women with Disabilities Victoria. So, Karen, as a systemic advocacy yourself for women with disabilities, how do you think advocates can use the plan?
Thanks, Marianne. And thanks, Christian, for that nice little introduction to the issues that I totally agree with you. I think that the state plan is a good plan. It's got some really critical issues in there with regard to housing. We haven't talked a lot about housing, and it's a very big issue at the moment for people with disabilities in Victoria, but also all of the areas that we have been talking about. But it's just a plan. What it is that's really important for us as advocates is that it's government policy. It's been signed off by the Victorian government, and as you so rightly say, we need to hold them accountable. So I think the timing for talking about this at the moment with this conference is really important, because we've got an election coming up, I'm sure everybody here knows very well, in November. And this is the time when we really should be making sure that the current government can report on exactly how well it is performing in all of the different areas of the plan. And I think my greatest criticism, I think, of the plan is that it's not good at resourcing evaluation. And I think it's really important for all of the departments that are relevant to be accountable in the sense of reporting back. What's made a difference? How are we now seeing difference in, for example, the Department of Justice in terms of access to justice for people with disabilities? We've seen a report on the inquiry into justice, but we haven't seen specific outcomes at the moment. So my view would be that we should be pushing very hard in the coming election that both this government and the current opposition can talk about what's going to happen in terms of indicators for the future against the plan. Our particular interest as women with disabilities is how the disadvantage of gender intersects with our disadvantage as people with disabilities. So we're particularly interested in health services for women with disabilities, sexual and reproductive health. We're interested in violence against women with disabilities, empowering women with disabilities and the representation of women with disabilities both in their local community and at the state level. We focus on the National Disability Insurance Scheme and how it's recognising gender as a critical issue, how it's training the NDIA staff to be aware of things like violence and how to respond to violence when it's recognised. And we're also focused on access to mainstream services. So all of the things that we're concerned about, we can see fit with the aspirations and goals of the plan. And there are some areas that have been specifically funded for, and most particularly the Gender and Disability Workforce Development Program, which is about making disability services more responsive and understanding of gender and providing much more respectful approaches to women with disabilities in particular, but respect for men and women as being different, and recognising that there are differences between men and women with disabilities. It's pretty basic, but that's where we are. So we've been funded by the Victorian government to roll out a pilot of that program, and one of the really good things about that program is it's not just about a workforce development, but it's also about employment for women with disabilities as trainers. So I'm smiling at Colleen over here because she's one of our trainers at the moment, and we've been able to train 11 women with disabilities and to employ some of those as trainers. So what I'm trying to say is I think it's really important that we look at how the different components of the plan can intersect with one another, and that we don't just try to do one thing at a time, because all of these things, as we all know here as advocates, interrelate. I'm conscious of time, so maybe I'll leave it there and leave it for questions.
Okay. Thanks, Karen. I, given we started late, I think it's already past five. So it's five. I think I won't go back to the floor, if that's okay. Not that we're not, that there's not questions more, just time, but I'm sure the panellists won't mind being here for a little bit after the session to talk to people. But in lieu of the time, I might just ask the panel in, you know, say 10, 15 seconds, if you've got any special comments you would like to make, and if you would like, you might address the question that Christian asked about influencing the public sector as well as the private, but just some brief comments before we close and hand to Robin.
I'll talk about the private sector, public sector comment. It's absolutely great question. I think that one of the issues probably for government is it's very hard to go out and talk to the private sector when you're not doing that well yourself. So to try and engage a large sector of the community and get asked, so how are you travelling? Hard question to answer. So I think there was a firm view that government needed to resolve a number of the issues for itself. And it's not to say that a number of the actions that are in there don't also work with the private sector, so that's also within certain actions. I just think that we needed a start point, which was about government getting its own house in order before going out and engaging with the private sector in a really positive dialogue. Yeah.
Thanks, Michael. Laura, have you got any final comment?
I just want to encourage you to keep talking to us and telling us what your concerns are, and whether it's through the Human Rights Commission or directly to us or attending our formal sessions. Change is happening, and I can assure you that things are improving in public transport because of what you're telling us. So just please keep doing it. It's really important to us.
Thanks. Liz?
Okay, I'll go to the answer of the private sector as well. I'm passionate about that area, and I think it's all about dollars. So if they're accessible, they're going to get more people in their business, and not only, as you say, people with disabilities, other people who may have access issues, whether they're parents with prams, et cetera, et cetera. And I think, to me, it's really about highlighting the benefit of, and you know, you and I know that, Christian, we've been out for dinner a number of times and spent quite a bit of money at various restaurants. So, you know, I mean, that's not just restaurants, but any area of being accessible, it's really important. And I would also just recommend that through your networks, I'm sure you know someone who is sits on the VDAC board. You know, if there's issues that you can't, you feel that you can't get traction with, please bring them through your networks onto our agenda. Thank you.
Thanks, Liz. Karen, would you like to make some?
Look, just to say that there's two parts to the plan, and I often just read the overarching document, but the implementation plan is where there's a lot of detail. So I encourage you to all go back to the website and have a look before you get into election mode. Have a look at the implementation plan, because that's where I think you can really pin politicians down.
Thanks, Karen, and thanks everyone for your expertise, for your insights, both from the floor and from our speakers. And I guess the takeout for me is, use the plan. As advocates, take the plan and hold the departments and government bodies accountable for what they've committed to do and promised to do. And I think as advocates, we should be holding them to task. But just before I close, Michael and his office will be taking on board the comments made today and using them in the action plan for the next stage, for checking how we're going, looking at how we can report that better and so on. But I'm sure if you wake up in the middle of the night with a terrific idea, Michael, I'd love to hear from you. You didn't have to have it today. But thank
Maybe
you.
Not in the middle of the night, but, yeah, in the next day.
No,
yeah,
just you don't have to send it.
That's actually the book he's got on the top of his.
Yeah.
That's right.
For those who don't know what book she had, I think it was The Plan. Thanks. If you could just thank our speakers for their time and...